This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Joining us on the program in about 30 minutes time from Penticton, British Columbia, site of the Young Stars Tournament, Paul Edmonds, play-by-play voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on this fine station, is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, already updated this morning by our colleague Dave Manouk, is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'll say it to Richard first because Ezzy's still setting up here. But Richard, good morning. You're looking well.
Yeah, Drew, thank you. It's a cold September afternoon. The weather's awful. But I'm excited. I mean, Des Moines hockey's around the corner. And, of course, there was a game yesterday, and it's always nice to read a game story from Tim Campbell this morning. So I'm pumped.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. Even though it is a Young Stars game, I know it is
still a game.
It's still a game. Exactly. It's still a game. We can sort of begin to put the summer doldrums in our rearview mirror and begin to focus squarely on the season ahead. Mr. Ginsberg, good morning.
Mr. Mindell. Mr. Pollock. Mr. Debenham. Yeah, I watched most of that game. The only part of that game, I guess, that I didn't watch was when my computer crashed, because it was streaming live on Jets.com, right?
Right.
So I watched most of it. And
I thought it'd be when you passed out.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually in bed pretty early last night for me, getting ready for the show today. So, I echo what you guys just said. It's nice to see hockey being played. We're obviously still waiting for training camp to start, but it's nice to see the Young Stars play, and this is a showcase tournament. I think we're going to talk about it a little bit next segment. Games don't mean much as far as I think you'd agree with that, but it's nice to see these guys on the ice, and we'll see these guys probably playing in the NHL a few years from now, some of them at least.
Well, the Jets certainly hope so, sooner rather than later, and we will talk about the Young Stars tournament next segment. We start this Saturday morning with the following, though.
I think the comment speaks for itself. I don't think it needs any elaboration. He's a player that has the capability of getting us to that next level. So within the context of the conversation, I was forced to discuss all of our opponents in the Central Division and some of the flashy signings they made, and how in the world were we going to compete with those guys? So, I mentioned Evander Kane as a guy that can step his game up and in my opinion, be better than the signings that were made around the league. So that was the gist of it. That was my point. I understand there's not a whole lot going on right now. The Bombers don't play this weekend for a little bit. I don't know what the Gold Eyes are doing. But, I think, once again, just making something out of nothing, and it seems to happen a lot in regards to Kaner. He makes a comment, and that's what you guys have to talk about.
Another week, another Twitter-based controversy, if you even want to call it a controversy. So much ado about nothing. Evander Kane just trying to get a rile out of the city and the sports media. Blake Wheeler calling out his teammate. Which of the sides do you fall on in this, saga, for lack of a better word?
The fact that we're calling this a saga, to me, is pretty ridiculous. And I know that when Evander Kane's name comes up and when Blake Wheeler makes these comments, Richie, it seems to stir up more controversy than other players. But Blake Wheeler was in, and if you listen to Craig Custance, who Hustler and Lawless had on, I believe it was Wednesday, and you can download that on the TSN radio site, you can tell that Craig Custance even was downplaying Blake Wheeler's comments, and it was said in the context of Blake Wheeler's comments, that is, were said in the context of Evander Kane's older now, he's got to step up. It wasn't condescending. It wasn't anything critical, really. It was more so where he's at in his career. And he even mentioned before that comment about Evander Kane needing to step it up, Richie, that he has all of the potential, and it's going to be exciting to see the potential. As far as the tweet goes, I've kind of decided this year especially, and this doesn't have to do just with Evander Kane. It has to do with in general, and this maybe has to this is maybe Richie's influence because he's not on Twitter anymore, but I'm not taking Twitter that seriously at all anymore, because Evander Kane was clearly joking, in my opinion. And he was, of course, he was trying to get a rile out of the media. I don't think there's any type of personal conflict between Kane and Wheeler. And quite honestly, I agree with Wheeler, and I don't have any problem with what Kane tweeted, because I didn't think it was a big deal. And that's just my opinion. Richie?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, this gets blown out of proportion in this day and age. And there's a, you know, for the players, it's a, well, for the media wants candidacy from the players, and then they want the guys to be forthright in their opinions, and then as soon as they're forthright in their opinions, they tweet it all about it, write about it, and then it goes crazy, and there's a firestorm, and there's a backlash, because the players then don't want to speak about issues. The media then gets mad because they have nothing to write about. So, I mean, that's the circle that we're working in here. Do I have any issue at all with Wheeler's comments? I mean, no. I mean, they're on point, frankly. In this day and age of everybody being so guarded and PR guys coaching players to say everything, I would have expected Wheeler to say, you know, we have some guys in the team who can step up. I'm amongst those guys, and we all need to do it together and to be able to overcome the signings in the division. That's what most people would have said. Maybe he was caught off guard. One thing I didn't like about his comment is that he was forced to talk about the other teams. Blake, take it easy. I mean, you got asked about other teams in the division. You can talk about it. You're not forced to talk about anything. And I don't think he's just that polished, or maybe he just likes to speak his mind. I mean, you see Blake Wheeler generally is pretty honest and I think pretty emotional after games at times, and that's when you're going to see him spout off a bit. Obviously, he wasn't that emotional in this interview, so I was a little bit surprised to see it. But, you know, in terms of Evander Kane's tweet, yeah, again, I mean, Evander Kane, I don't really think cares either way if Wheeler's saying that about him or not. I mean, that's one of the good parts about Evander Kane, if you're talking about, you know, good and bad parts. I think sometimes he can't be influenced by other people, and I think sometimes that's a really good thing, because he wouldn't get down on himself and has that confidence. So overall, I think it's mostly much ado about nothing. It's just somebody speaking their mind, which I appreciate, but I'm sure the Jets don't, because it creates a firestorm. So as a fan of hockey, I actually like hearing this. As a member of the Jets organization, I think I could do without this, and I probably will speak, and I would almost guarantee Scott Brown has spoken. Scott Brown, the public relations director for the Jets, has spoken to Wheeler about comments like this, just in terms of not saying things to create stories.
Here's the exact quote from Blake Wheeler. I feel like if he, Evander Kane, comes in and embraces a leadership role and just comes ready to play, it's going to help our team. It's going to get us where we want to go.
So again, it's not a critical comment, but the point is, you know, if you want to come back and say what they probably would want him to say, Evander Kane's a really good part of our team. I expect him to take the next step this year. He's certainly capable of that. That's what you say.
Just a matter of the wording.
Just the wording. And you know what? But at the same time, you're asking him and he's giving you his honest opinion. So I appreciate that as well. I mean, you're not going to get on Blake Wheeler here for this. I mean, you know, again, Craig Custance covered the Atlanta Thrashers. Now, he was gone before Wheeler came in there for half a season. But Craig Custance covered the Atlanta Thrashers from 99 to 2008.
And then Chris Vivlemore came in.
Right. But so he'd have a relationship with the guys on the team. Mm-hmm. And accordingly, he'd be a little bit more trusted than some other guys. Now, Wheeler wasn't there, but you understand the point of him working with people in the organization before.
He's familiar with the Atlanta Thrashers organization.
So there's a little bit more of a trust there.
I don't disagree with anything Richie said, and I think the question almost becomes with this, because I even told you guys this when this came out. I thought it was ridiculous, and I'm trying to completely ignore most stuff that happens on Twitter. I thought it was funny, and I didn't think there was anything to it, really. But obviously, I think the question is, if this was any other player that Blake Wheeler was saying, talking about stepping up, would there be any type of controversy?
In my
opinion, I'm just saying,
that's why it's an
right,
issue.
Right, looking at this in a vacuum, though, but I still think you could. Again, it's a little bit early to start talking about Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba in that same context, because they're 3 and 4 years younger. I think we almost need to relax a little bit here. And Evander Kane hasn't been traded. He's on the Jets. Let's see how this year goes.
Well, again,
I've been critical of Evander Kane for some of his actions off the ice and his play on the ice. I have. You can go back and listen to the show the last couple of years. I really have been. I think you got to give him a clean slate this year because it's really a difficult situation where he was expected to be traded. A lot of people expected him to be traded. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's an adult. He can handle this. I'm just saying this is a little bit ridiculous here. I mean, he's saying he needs to take on a bigger leadership role. And as you said, Richie, he's right. I mean, he's 23 years old now. He's a part of this core, and he has been part of this core for a while now, even though he was younger. That's what happens when you come into the NHL at 18 years old.
I think if the Winnipeg Jets can get out of Evander Kane, I think mm-hmm. this is probably what Blake Wheeler, you know, in, to some respects is saying. If the Winnipeg Jets can get, you know, the 2011-2012 Evander Kane, or even a better version where he had 30 goals and 27 assists, mm-hmm. you know, a 60-point guy as opposed to the guy we've seen the last couple of years, you know, he had 40 points last year, albeit injury-related. But this is a guy who certainly has 70 and 80 point talent. So if the Winnipeg Jets can get that out of him, mm-hmm. it definitely changes the dynamic and the success of the team, likely. And I think that's what Blake Wheeler, to some respects, is saying, is that, you know, not necessarily an outside acquisition, but an internal improvement can make a world of difference.
Well, first off, he has no choice because there weren't any outside improvements aside from Matthew Perreault. That's the first thing to qualify.
Right.
Second thing is, you know, is that's true. I mean, everybody knows that, too. It's just a matter of bringing it to light in the way that he did with the national ESPN guy. And so, first of all, stop blaming the local media. That's all these guys love to do is blame the local media.
First of all, the reaction would be any different anywhere else.
Of course.
You can look back at all of the, I mean, to call them sagas is ridiculous, but you can go back and look at all of the incidents involving Evander Kane, Richie, if it's the money phone or it's comments that he made on a Vancouver radio station. This stuff gets picked up everywhere.
The comments on the radio station are a bigger deal than the money phone.
But it's not just Winnipeg, though. I mean, Puck Daddy's writing about it. Steve Simmons was writing about it. It's not just in. You can't just single out the Winnipeg media. Sure, this station happens to cover the Winnipeg Jets, and we talk about it more than anyone else. But you can't say that it's just a collection of five or six people.
If you want 24-hour sports radio, and you want to listen to it, and you want to watch TSN 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you're going to get all the stories. Can't have it both ways. Again, if you want one TSN and you don't want any stories, that's fine. But then don't whine about there being nothing to watch on TV. And when there's five TSNs, you're going to get every story.
And frankly,
sometimes I don't like half the stories, and they're created and they're non-stories, but they're being talked about.
Let me ask you guys this about away from this story, about the away from Wheeler and Kane.
Sure.
You know, is Blake Wheeler taking on a larger leadership role on this team?
I think
now?
He did last year. Absolutely, he did last
year. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's taken
another
step. I think the one thing that he cares, you know, he cares. I think he probably needs to control his emotions a little bit better, but I thought he took a nice step towards that last year with his play and leadership, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a good thing.
Aside from the comments, I found it interesting that the player who represented the Jets at whatever this media day was in New York was Blake Wheeler. I thought that almost spoke volumes if he had said nothing at all. The fact it was him who was out there as opposed to, I imagine it's been Andrew Ladd for the last couple of years or whatever. It sort of seems like a bit of a changing of the guard.
Excuse me, but aside from Ladd, who else would it be?
Exactly. It wouldn't be anybody else.
It's
going to
be a veteran.
Eventually, it'll be Jacob Trouba, I figure, or eventually it'll be Mark Scheifele. But it does seem like the Ladd leadership era, well, certainly not going away, is also now being supplemented by the Wheeler leadership era or the potential for that to exist.
You sure hope so, because this team lacks leadership. There's not a lot of leaders on this team.
Right, and it seems like Blake Wheeler, now that he's another couple of years into his career and a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more familiar. And I mean, he is the Jets' best offensive weapon. I might be speaking a bit out of turn.
No, that's fair.
But he certainly is the guy who creates the most matchup problems for the opponents. Mm-hmm. And we saw what he can do offensively when he's feeling it, as he was towards the last half of last year when he'd be coming down the left wing of the opponents with a head of steam and he's just a charging bull. And he was almost unstoppable at that point.
That especially happened on the power play. And both power play and even strength. And teams were actually game planning against it. You would see teams shadow him through the neutral zone. And as you mentioned, Drew, going down the left wing as a right winger. Different and causes problems off the left boards in the offensive zone because he can protect the puck. You know what? At the end of the day, I think it boils down to this. Craig Custins asked him about all the improvements of the teams in the division. And he said, we know. At the end of the day, he basically said the only way we're going to be able to beat those teams is if we have a lot of internal improvement. And that's tough. And he better believe it because he's a player on the team and he has to believe it. But as an outside observer, things don't look that good. So you better take, you know what? You better take the us against the world attitude. And I think that's somewhat of what he's doing here. And that's what you need to do. Because, you know, if you don't, then Matthew Perreault isn't Jason Spezza. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And not Paul Stastny.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we head out to Penticton. We'll start talking about the Young Stars tournament. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. In about 10 minutes' time, we'll head out to Penticton, talk to our buddy Paul Edmonds about last night's Jets Young Stars game. They were defeated by the Calgary Flames Young Stars by a 6-4 margin. Ezzy, you watched the most of that game.
I did. I didn't have any rapid eye movement, though.
Okay.
It was REM,
Drew.
It was REM. Come on.
Wow.
Come on. I mean, Timmy, you know what? Timmy always gets my references.
I was like, what, you didn't fall asleep in the middle of the
game? It's almost like Tim's like my default, like,
yeah,
I have to go to Tim because I know Drew. It's going to go over Drew's head. Richie knows music. Tim knows music.
Yeah.
You know, Drew just likes Muzak. So I did like the game yesterday. It started off really sloppily, and I think
that's not a word.
That's definitely not a word.
Sloppily?
Sloppily is not a word. Sloppy is the word you're looking for.
Is it sloppily?
Sloppily is not a word.
Richie's going to check the
Scrabble
dictionary here.
Yeah.
Might be a word.
I think sloppy would be the word.
The game started off pretty sloppy.
Okay.
For Poppy. No, but the game was sloppy, and there was one goal towards the end of the first period. I think it was Austin Brassard that got it. Maybe that was the second period.
Apparently sloppily might be a word.
Yeah, might be a word. Anyways, back to the game here, and I think you guys would agree here that this tournament, to me, what I'm watching in this tournament, I'm looking at individual players. I'm almost looking at this game like a scout would look at this game and not really caring about the score. The 6-4 score, guys, doesn't matter. And at the end of the day, I don't think anybody in the Jets organization really cares about the score. I think they're or how many wins they get, I guess, in these three games. I think they're concerned about seeing certain players, how they do. There's a lot of draft picks in this tournament, and the Flames actually have the most draft picks. The Jets have the second most draft picks. Some of these guys, they're going back to junior. A lot of these guys are going back to junior. A few of these guys, like Adam Lowry, Josh Morrissey, they have a chance at actually playing in the NHL next year. So I was looking at certain players, how they reacted. I thought a guy like JC LaPon actually looked really good. He's a guy that I really like. He'll most likely play most of the season with the Ice Caps, but I really like him. He's a gritty guy and kind of had a quiet, good season for the Ice Caps last year. But, you know, you're looking for, Adam Lowry had a big hit.
Yeah, a fight at the end of the first period,
yeah,
is that right?
A fight at the end of the first period. And, you know, Nikolai Ehlers had a nice goal, but this is a showcase, guys. This is just an opportunity for the rookies to get together and for really the teams, Richie, to evaluate their players. The scores don't matter. The fact that the Flames beat the Jets 6-4 doesn't mean much.
I mean, ideally, and I didn't see the game as like you did, ideally you want to evaluate the younger players more so than the older players. And by that, I mean Adam Lowry's performance has, you know, you want to read into it a little bit, but you want to read more into how Nikolai Ehlers plays against older guys. Because Adam Lowry's played in the AHL now.
Yeah,
right.
Full season.
You've seen him firsthand. Keith McCammer just seen him firsthand.
Yeah.
Sure, you want to see how he's done over the offseason, but three games isn't going to give you a lot. With a young guy you haven't really seen before, you want to see how he fares against 22 or 21, you know, older guys like that.
Men.
Yeah, men. Yeah, young men,
and
but
Richie,
men.
Let me tell you, because we interviewed Nikolai Ehlers right after he was drafted,
mm-hmm.
and ninth overall, and we know he's a skill player, but the guy against the likes of Johnny Gaudreau, who was the Hobie Baker Award yeah. winner, and Sam Bennett, who was a top first round pick of the Calgary Flames, Nikolai Ehlers, he's got world class speed. He can keep up with all these guys. And you know, if you're looking for a guy to really focus on or to take something from that game, it's Nikolai Ehlers might have been the best player in that game. And Johnny Gaudreau scored a nice goal, too. But, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, you can tell he's got world-class talent. And I'm not saying that he's going to make the team this year, because I think there's a very good chance, higher than 90% chance, that he goes back to Halifax or the QMJHL. But I'm just saying, if you're to Richie's point, this is really more about the 18- and 19-year-olds. I mean, there's 22-year-olds in that game. So, I mean, those guys, they're, no offense to them, but there's not a really good chance that those guys are factor into the short or even long-term plans of the Jets. Some of these guys are on tryouts. Chase Ballasy was one of those guys that got a goal. He was a Nashville draft pick. And then there was also Ben Walker, who played for the Victoria Royals on a tryout. The guys that they're really looking out are looking for, pardon me, are the 18- and 19-year-old guys that are most likely going back to junior. I think we'd all agree with that.
I would think that's probably a safe bet, like you said. You know, one of the guys that I find interesting, and this isn't necessarily about his performance yesterday, is Brendan Kitchen. You know, this is a guy who was a late round draft pick of the Jets after he re-entered the draft. You know, after being, I believe he was drafted in the fifth round by the New York Islanders, and then he was re-entered the draft after he couldn't come to terms with them. It was a seventh round pick of the Jets, so almost, I mean, this, when you're talking seventh round pick, you're talking a flyer, at best. And he had a very good year last year in St. John's with the Ice Caps. You know, certainly offensive oriented, but he's sort of an interesting guy now that doesn't get a lot of publicity, that doesn't get a lot of talk about being able to make that next step up to the Winnipeg Jets organization. But I think he's a guy that people could be, you know, could see some time with the Jets in this coming year, depending on what they need.
Yeah. But where, though, Drew? And I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but as a guy like Kitchen, who's an offensive talent.
Yeah, right shot.
Yeah, not right shot, exactly. And an offensive talent, not the biggest, you know, strongest, fastest guy. So where does he fit in? Because if you look at the right side, let's look at the Jets' right side.
No, you're absolutely right.
Jacob Trouba, and you have Zach Bogosian. Is Paul Postma in there? Okay, the question is, does he give you more than Paul Postma? And then not only that, but do Pardee or Ellerby play with Stewart? Or where does Stewart play? And where does Klitson play? I mean, it's not exactly the most dynamic defense in the National Hockey League. So I see your point in terms of the ability to help out. But if he's going to be, let's be honest here, this team needs more defensively oriented players who can move the puck, of course, than a guy like Kitchen. Like, Kitchen seems to me, from what I've heard, to be more of an offensive specialist. Mm-hmm. And this team doesn't really need an offensive specialist. I mean, right now in the power play, they have Trouba, they have Bufflin on the point, they have Enstrom. And they want to keep Bogosian there and maybe play somebody else.
No, I totally agree with you in that, you know, what the Jets need on the back end, he doesn't totally satisfy that. But I think that's not to say he still can't play his way up there.
That's true. And I think another point to note, and we'll talk about this more as the season goes on, with Matthew Perreault now as a left shot and a passer on the power play may work through the half boards on his side, which may lead the Jets to possibly consider running a 1-3-1 with him on the power play unit. So that might leave a right-handed shot like Kitchen. That granted, it have to be injuries because Bogosian, Trouba, and Bufflin are all right-handed shots.
Right.
But that idea. So I don't think Kitchen works his way in this year. I think he'll need to improve his defensive play in the AHL and maintain that offensive performance. Again, I haven't seen him play more than a little bit with exhibition play, if I recall. But I don't know really much about his game. That's really what I've just what I've heard. But there's a ways to go for him. And we didn't even speak about Josh Morrissey as well. So, and you know what, Drew, if he was a left-handed shot, I'd say, hold on a second, you're onto something. Right-handed shot, and this team is tough.
Richie's talking 1-3-1. I'm getting excited. It must be hockey season here.
1-3-1, just to clarify one more time, that's a power play setup where you have one defenseman sort of in the middle of the blue line in the offensive zone. You have three guys lined up from the left boards, the middle of the ice, and the right boards, and then another player in front of the goalie right in front. So yeah, almost creating a bit of a T formation. Mm-hmm. That's what you say when you say 1-3-1.
Yeah. It's also a way you can order your coffee at Tim Hortons. You can get one cream. One cream, three sugars, and a Timbit. Just get the Timbit right in there. So that's another formation of the 1-3-1. No, Richie, I agree with you back on Brendan Kitchen, though. He's 22 years old, and I think that if he does play for the Jets this year, and again, you mentioned Paul Postma, there's other players, Keaton Ellerby, veteran guys now in their mid-20s that are ahead of him, but I think that his future is bright. And this guy put up big numbers in the WHL, and yeah, I've only seen him play in full game action a few times, once with the Ice Caps, and once in the preseason, but this guy has offensive talent, and it's good for him. As a seventh-round pick in the 2013 draft, he's become a top defenseman for the Ice Caps and Keith McCambridge. And so the future looks bright for him. But again, for him to have a role with the Jets, any type of significant role where he plays, let's say, 20, 30 games with the Jets, they're really going to have to find room for him, because on that right side on defense, that's where they're strong. It's the left side that they're still looking for that second pairing defenseman. So Brendan Kitchen, I think, you know, he's a top prospect for this team. And I think in 2013, when he was drafted seventh overall, when he went back into the draft, people kind of thought he was this kind of long shot. Seventh round. We weren't even sure. But guys, he's put up 48 points in the AHL as a 21-year-old. So that's pretty good.
I think it's just, not to be disrespectful, I just think it's teams and fans generally overvaluing their own prospects. That's what I think it is.
So, meaning that his point total is smoke and mirrors, or that it won't translate to the next level?
Yeah, I don't think you're talking about a top end next level guy. So I think you're talking about specialist.
When it comes to Kitchen, I'm not saying at all that he's going to be a top four defenseman. I think you're looking at a bottom pairing offensive guy.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But I think that he has shown the ability, and again, he's only played one pro year, because before that he was in the WHL. He was an overager in the WHL with the Kelowna Rockets. So he's only played one full year, just like Adam Lowry. But and this is where development comes in, guys. And this is why the draft and development aspect is so crucial. It's been so crucial for teams like the Detroit Red Wings, the Philadelphia Flyers. These teams develop these guys in the AHL. Wait till they're 23, wait till they're 24. Then when they're ready, that's when they give them full-time duty. So I think a guy like Kitchen at 22, he might not be ready now to step in and play a significant role, but at 24, once you have a couple of other players that aren't in front of him, we've talked about those guys, Postma, LRB, Adam Party, these guys are older players that are higher up on the depth chart.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we head out to Penticton. We'll talk to Paul Edmonds about more on last night's Young Stars game between the Jets and the Flames. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca. This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline to beautiful Penticton, British Columbia, where we're joined by the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, Paul Edmonds. Paul, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. It is beautiful here, gentlemen. I understand it's going to get better back home. I'm talking to my wife today. But, it's gorgeous here. But it comes with a cost. You have to pay for the scenery, gentlemen.
Yeah? The hotel room? That's very it's very expensive, is it?
Well, you know what BC stands for, right? Bring cash.
Nice.
It's a Winnipeg weekend there in BC, of course. The Jets are playing in Penticton, and the Bombers playing at BC Place today against the Lions later on Blue Bomber Game Day here on the station, 7 o'clock. Walby bombing and Westwood.
I would suggest that one team today needs a win more than the team that played last night, for sure.
Well, and let's get started talking about last night. I mean, obviously, it's a preseason exhibition Young Stars tournament, so the wins and losses don't matter dramatically. What did you think of the Jets' performance last night there, Paul?
Overall, I really enjoyed the game. I thought the game had some very good skill and a high tempo to it. End-to-end, first period for sure. Definitely got a little bit sloppy on the Jets' side in the second period, and then the game settled down, and I kind of really thought that Calgary kind of took control and grabbed the momentum from that second period into the third and eventually took the lead and then kind of skated toward the win with an empty net goal. But overall, I was pretty impressed, and impressed with the likes of some of the players that you would expect, and then others that were sort of on the depth chart and maybe just invitees or free agent signings that played in the game last night. We can get to that in a little bit more detail, but I thought the game had real good tempo and flow to it. I was very impressed, and for those that were there last night in attendance, thoroughly entertained for sure for the first one out of the gate.
Paul, before we get to some of the other prospects, I know we want to talk about Nikolai Ehlers and we want to talk about Josh Morrissey, Lowry, and others. I wanted to ask you quickly about Connor Hellebuck, because as you mentioned, there was an empty net goal. He let in five goals. Up until this point, we've really only heard about him playing with UMass Lowell. He won, of course, the first ever Mike Richter Award for being the best goalie, but we haven't seen him. This is kind of our first taste, and even though it's the Young Stars Classic and it's not the St. John's Ice Caps, which he'll be playing for this year, it's kind of our first taste. What was your first impressions of Connor Hellebuck in last night's game?
Well, first off, as he's a big guy. You know, just physical stature, 6'4", 200 pounds. So what does that mean? Well, physically, he just covers a lot more than that you would have a guy that's maybe 5'11 or 6 feet. I thought last night, square to the puck, I thought his position was pretty good. I didn't think that he handled a rebound real good on that second Furland goal where there was a shot that came in, and it was a blistering drive, as Danny Gallivan would have said back in his days with Montreal. Went right into his glove and right out. Probably should have had it, and there should have been no rebound. Instead, it got coughed back out in toward the slot, and in comes Michael Furland from Swan River, Manitoba, and bang, it's in the net. So that was sort of one of the goals that I would have said if he would have liked to have had back, that would have been it. But overall, I thought he played pretty solid. He was left out to dry on a number of occasions where, as I said, it got sloppy in the second period, and defensively, if you want to put a microcosm on it, that was the problem with the Winnipeg Jets. It was getting out of their own zone at times, making that first pass, and then turnovers at their blue line. And those are just deadly because the transition game, especially with speed with the young guys these days in the game, right back into your zone, and now you're on the defensive, and you got pretty much five guys running around beside you. So I thought that he was pretty good. And we'll see what they do tomorrow. I don't know what kind of rotation they're going to go with, but I would imagine that UC Okanora will get to start at some point, and then we might see Hellebuck back again. So if they alternate to the next two games or whether Okanora gets the next two, I'm not sure. But I'd like to see Connor. I'm sure the Jets would like to see Connor, and I'd like to see what they can do in sprucing up their defensive game a little bit, maybe today. And that's sort of the interesting part, what they do at the skate this morning. You know, I was pretty impressed with them, and I would like to say that at the same time, when the Jets get down to a little bit more business today and have another skate, that they'll identify and rectify some of the problems that they had in their own zone, thus helping their goaltender out. But overall, I thought he was pretty solid despite, you know, letting in five goals.
Paul, Nikolai Ehlers is one, you know, the Jets' most recent first-round draft pick, getting a lot of attention leading into this tournament because of his skill level and the potential that he has. How did he perform last night?
Richie, well-deserved. I mean, this guy was as advertised. Quick, really fast. I mean, just with the puck on his stick. You know, sometimes you get guys when you go and watch a game that skate like the wind and then put a puck on their stick, and instead of being in fifth gear, they're down to third. You know, last night I thought that even at times when he had the puck, he found another gear with the puck on his stick. The ability for me to watch him go from the outside with speed, drive the lane, and then get a little bit of that gap on the defenseman, use that gap to cut in the middle and create a better scoring chance once you've entered the blue line. And he did that for a goal, and he did it last night. Came in on his off wing, the right wing side, cut in, had some gap. There wasn't great gap control by the Calgary D. Recognized that, cut in, had the open space, and ripped one top corner on the Calgary netminder, Ortorio. So, you know, that was quite impressive to get his first goal. Then he came down and did the same thing on the near side, working off his forehand and then going to the backhand and tried to go to that top corner on the glove side again, and Ortorio ended up making the save. So, you know, it was not just one way in one direction, it was both for Ehlers, and I thought the way he controlled the puck, handled the puck, and skated, definitely you could see why the Jets were so high on him, taking him in the first round and ninth overall. Mm-hmm. As advertised, this guy I think will challenge at main camp, and we'll all get a chance to see him when we get back home for that. But a dynamic player, no doubt, and you can see why he had, you know, 50 goals and so many points with Halifax in the queue.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking to the Winnipeg Jets play-by-play voice, Paul Edmonds. He's live in Penticton, British Columbia, for the Young Stars Tournament. Paul, we mentioned Nikolaj Ehlers. You got to talk next, obviously, about Josh Morrissey on the back end. Lots of Jets fans have hope for Morrissey to enter into the team's lineup to be a regular with the big club this year. How did Josh Morrissey look yesterday?
Well, I hate to bust anybody's bubble, but I thought he was okay. I didn't think really anybody on the back end of the blue line for the Winnipeg Jets had a particularly great game. Maybe Nicholas Brouillard, who's an invitee, was one of the guys that I thought was most impressive. But there was mistakes all the way around. And partly, I think that was Calgary's game plan. They had real good dumps in toward the Jets' end, real good shoot-ins. They attacked real quick, and as a result, puck retrieval was a bit of a problem for the Jets on the blue line last night in their own zone, and then the first pass was a bit of a problem last night. You know, we talk first pass sometimes. It's not that 25-foot pass that goes from the corner into the middle up by the blue line or across ice. Sometimes it's just that 8-foot, 6-foot pass that you have to make, and I didn't think that the Jets, as a defensive core, did a real good job on that last night, and Josh Morrissey would be included in that. So I'm not ready to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater here, but I didn't. He didn't impress me as much as all the billing leading up for me to see him for the first time last night, but I think you could say that right across the board with the seven guys that they dressed on the blue line.
Paul, another guy that Jets fans have their eye on, obviously, is Adam Lowry, and he had that big hit yesterday, and he had that fight towards the end of the first period. But I guess my question is not just as far as last night's game goes, but as far as Adam Lowry goes in general. He had that season with the St. John's Ice Caps last year, good regular season, played well in the playoffs, really earned the trust of Keith McCambridge. But he's a guy that fans are looking at as someone who could potentially step in and play a third or fourth line role. How have you seen him grow, I guess, since being drafted in 2011? And is this maybe a more important tournament for him than it is for maybe some other players?
Yeah, I would say so. That's pretty fair, Izzy. I mean, you know, he's been in the system a little bit, and there was some injuries, and then he's a first-year pro now turning into a sophomore pro here, so we'll see where that goes. You know, last night I thought he did some of the little things that he needed to do. He's a big body, not afraid of the physical going, as you just suggested, both with, you know, some physical contact in terms of body checking and then a fight. But, you know, at times last night, his job was to distribute the puck, and he certainly did that with Ehlers. I didn't think Scott Kosmachuk was particularly very good last night. And, you know, here's another 49-goal scorer in major junior hockey. And in order for that line to really go, because it was Lowry, Ehlers, and Kosmachuk, you have to have everybody going. So, you know, the other part of it last night for Lowry is he missed at the 20-minute mark of the first period, got in the fight, so he missed the first 5 minutes of the second period, and then there was some line juggling, and it took the Jets a little bit to kind of get and mix and match back into that second period. At the same time the second period was going along, you know, here comes Calgary to score. Well, they ended up scoring seven goals between the two teams, and Calgary had four of them for a 4-4 tie after two. So it kind of got away on the Jets a little bit in terms of the game management because one of their top centers was sitting for 5 minutes for a major for fighting. But he's a big body, doesn't shy away from the physicality. A lot of times we talk about big guys and wish that they were a little bit more gritty. Well, certainly Adam Lowry has that. He's been named the captain, so they think highly of him, of this Young Stars Classic tournament. But obviously he, I would say, was pretty pleased with overall what the Jets did. But I'd like to see a little bit more from him in terms of puck distribution, and if he could get a little bit of hand from the right winger that he played with last night, that would certainly serve him well going into the next two games of this tournament and then beyond into main camp. But I think you're right. He's got a potential to maybe stick and stay at the start of the year. There's really no option to have to send him back to major junior or anything. So, you know, his two options are either St. John's or Winnipeg. But a lot of eyes will be on him because of his size, his pedigree, what he did last year. He was over a half a point a game in St. John's despite missing a lot of injury time. So this is a guy I think that the Jets have penciled in somewhere on their depth chart to make their team, whether it's this year or certainly next year.
Paul, when we talk about skill guys on the Jets, you know, we mentioned Josh Morrissey, and you've talked about his game, and we talked about Nikolaj Ehlers. Nick Batan, and all three of those guys are probably, you know, diminutive forwards or defensemen. How did Nick Batan look yesterday?
Really good. Really good. And, you know, one of the things as you talk about being diminutive is the fact that you better be able to skate, and mm-hmm. he certainly brings that. Nick Pétain was very good last night. Breakaway speed in a lot of respects in a one-on-one chase with the puck. You know, he's only 5'9", 173 pounds, not afraid to get to the gritty areas. I thought there was a spot last night where the Jets were down by one where he carried the puck into the zone, kind of curled around by the side of the net, waited, had some space, and then put it on a stick. And I think it was DeLeo that had the opportunity to tap it in, and I think he hit the crossbar. It might have gone off Ortolio's stick and then off the crossbar, but that was just a fantastic creative play and a play with some patience that I think Nick Pétain has shown in Portland for all those years. Interesting, guys, that Pétain played with DeLeo, and of course there are a couple of, well, I guess Pétain was hoping maybe this year he'll be an alumni of the Portland Winterhawks, but he's 19, still with an option to go back. But he played on a line with DeLeo, and they're teammates from Portland, but they'd never really played before together because they're both centermen, and they've moved DeLeo over to the left-wing side. So maybe a little bit of growing pains there in the first game, but there seemed to be some chemistry there, and that one particular move and play that I saw from Nick Pétain last night impressed me highly for why the Jets drafted him, you know, in 2013. And every time he touched the puck, he was a threat on the offensive rush to make something happen. So good selection by the Winnipeg Jets. Dynamic player, a lot of skill, a lot of speed, but he needs that because he doesn't have a lot in terms of physical size.
You mentioned that, Paul. You know, it's an interesting point. Say DeLeo goes over to the wing. You know, thinking about centers in the National Hockey League, I can't really think of many off the top of my head who are under 5'10". You know, you think of a guy people like to compare Pétain to just because of size is Brendan Gallagher. You know, he's a right winger. Do you see Pétain being able to crack an NHL roster, being the Jets roster, really as a center, or is he eventually going to have to shift over to the left side?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question, Richie, because what are you trying to do here? I mean, can you say that maybe he can go up and down the wall and dig the puck out of the corner and mm-hmm. take a little bit more of a beating? Or do you want to keep him in the middle where he avoids some of that and his speed and acceleration and creativity and the way he reads the ice would be better served because he'll be able to maybe swing wide off the rush or in the middle or have some puck distribution? I'm not quite sure what they have in mind. I mean, When you're that smart and you have that kind of speed, you're going to identify the things in the areas where you need to be and what you need to do, and that includes in your own zone.
Right, right.
So what the plan is for him going forward, I'm not sure. I kind of wrestle a little bit sometimes with switching positions. Is it easier to go from being a winger to a center or from a center to a wing? And I guess you could make arguments on either side. But I think if you have the skill set that Nick Pétain has, a move maybe to the wall wouldn't certainly stunt his growth or development into the pro ranks at all. I just don't know what kind of plan they have for him. And again, you can make the argument as to his size, and is he better served in the middle of the ice or along the wall where he might take a little bit more of a beating, but can certainly maybe distribute the puck to somebody else in the middle or certainly on the left side.
Paul, we've got one last question for you here, and then we'll let you get back to enjoying your morning there in BC. But I actually wanted to ask you about the arena and, I guess, Penticton, because none of us have been there, and a lot of fans, because of the timing and where it is, I guess, geographically, don't get to go out there. It opened 6 years ago, and I know that the Penticton V's play in their Junior A BCHL, the same league that Travis Zajac played in, if I'm correct. What's the arena like, and what's the reception like for the fans? Do the fans really respond to this tournament there?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, as he grabbed a bit of a life of its own here. This is the third year now, and everywhere you go here in the Okanagan, you're going to see Vancouver Canucks. I mean, they're Canucks crazy here. There's BC Lions crazy here. So everything in this area, despite being a couple hours from Vancouver, gravitates toward the Vancouver sports teams. In terms of the arena, fantastic. It's a Junior A rink that might be the nicest Junior A rink that I've been in. It really rivals a major junior rink, you know, if you're going to watch the Western Hockey League. And I know there's that team just up the road in the Kelowna Rockets, you know, about an hour away. But fantastic facility here. and certainly the gathering place for this tournament. There's a lot. I was impressed. There was probably about 1,000 people for the Jets-Calgary game last night. Now, you're talking about a team that's the furthest east of the Western Canadian teams, probably not a huge draw in this market. Calgary is, you know, an hour flight away, so what kind of drawing power they have here, yet there was still 1,000 people in the building to watch the game. The game last night between Edmonton and Vancouver had much more people at it, of course, for obvious reasons. I think this whole concept here, where it's situated, and certainly the facilities that have been provided are top-notch. It would be a destination if you're looking to take a late summer, early fall trip, and you're a hockey fan, to come and watch, as a Jets fan, the young stars of the organization, and then see what the other three teams out west here have. This probably would be a good spot for you to maybe save up and bring the family or your spouse or a couple of buddies, because the weather's been terrific. It's a very scenic area, and certainly the facilities are top-notch for this kind of event. So, yeah, all in all, a real good tournament from what I've seen over the first couple of days, now into the third.
I'm sure you can find a decent golf game while you're out there as well, Paul.
Well, Munsey's going to golf today. I declined. I was offered, but I declined.
You didn't want to show Munsey up. That's right. That's the problem, right?
Well, I didn't know if it was free or not, and you guys know me. You know, if it's free, it's me, and I'll tee off at 3, right?
Exactly. There you go. Exactly.
Well, Paul, speaking of free, I think maybe I'll consider cashing in some of my air miles, and I'll come out there next year with you.
Oh,
how does that sound?
You know, and I'm sincere, Eddie. I mean, I think I was kind of thinking about this before I went on. You know, if you're looking for a trip late summer, or maybe you're, you know, you're kind of low on the totem pole when it comes to getting holidays at work, and you don't get the prime, you know, months of July or August, and you're looking to do something in September, this would be it. And the weather's still pretty good. It's mid-20s here and sunny, and you get to see some great hockey and be part of the vibe that is. And the interesting part is, it's kind of a Winnipeg Jets, Calgary Flames, Edmonton Oilers, and Vancouver Canucks who's who, because everybody's here, including all the AHL affiliates and their coaches and scouts. And, I mean, you can't walk a block without bumping into somebody that you might recognize from TV or their playing days, for sure.
It's like the Smythe division all over again.
It is. Yeah, it is. Although I'm kind of glad the Jets are in what we used to know as the Norris, because for the time change and all that. And we all know the record of the Jets 1.0 when it came to the Smythe division, okay, and getting out of the Smythe when it came to the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul, I have nightmares about, yeah, about those years.
Jets fans do too, Paul. Paul, yeah. Edmonds is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. Paul, thanks very much for doing this.
Okay, guys, anytime. Thanks a lot. Carry on the good work. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Paul. To you soon. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, bye.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, on this fine radio station for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, him recapping last night's Game 1 of the Young Stars Tournament, it is available for download on IllegalCurve.com. It will also be available via iTunes and TSN1290.ca. Reminder, 7 p.m. tonight, Blue Bomber Game Day, Walby Bombing in Westwood, the Bombers and the Lions. They'll get you set up for everything. That game kicking off at 9 o'clock on TSN. And we have Young Stars games coming up tomorrow on this fine station, and again on Monday. Coming up in the second hour of the show, we'll look around the NHL, look at some players that have been signed, some coaches that have been signed. NHL has implemented some new rule changes, and we'll discuss some of the unsigned restricted free agents. Are they going to sign soon, or do we have some holdouts on our hands? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. online at tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Quickly, Drew, I know you want to get to some signings here.
Yes.
But we got to give a shout-out to Bernstein's and give them a congratulations. They finished second out of 33 restaurants for La Burger Week.
Oh.
Their Sweet to Meet You Burger finished second.
Yes. It was an awesome burger.
And you finished first in consumption of the Sweet to Meet You Burger.
I wish, but no, that burger, we ate it obviously 2 weeks ago on the show.
Like together?
It was unbelievable. So congrats to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a great job with that Sweet to Meet You Burger. And of course, all sorts of great food still available at Bernstein's Deli. Check them out. And of course, if you are of the Jewish persuasion and the high holidays are upcoming in a couple weeks' time, check out Bernstein's Deli for all your catering needs, as he does in that commercial.
I mean,
and Auntie Ruthie was happy.
Bernstein's Deli, it's like a bar mitzvah every day there. Or a bat mitzvah.
It's nice to see that you're equal opportunity there, Ezzy. Let's talk about a couple of rule changes the NHL is officially implementing for the upcoming season. Let's start with the elimination of the spinorama. This is in the shootouts. You're no longer
Richie, I can't not laugh when we're talking about this. Like, this was the highlight of the rule changes. I actually agree with this, and I'll tell you why I agree with this. It's not just because of the forward momentum issue. And when I say that, I mean when you do the spinorama, is the puck still going forward? Everybody knows what I'm talking about here. I think it's the interference with the goalie. And that's the issue that I had with the spinorama. You saw a lot of guys going so close to the goalie, and it interfered with his ability to stop the puck. So I agree with it. Obviously, I think people have to realize you can still do a spinorama if you want during a game. You can't just do it in a penalty shot or a shootout. But what I always say, you know what I'm going to say, guys. What am I going to say? I want to get rid of the shootout entirely. So I don't think it's going anywhere, though. So I think the spinorama needs to be taken out. Guys need to find more creative ways of scoring where they're not interfering with the goalie or stopping their momentum. Forward momentum.
I mean, I understand their concern that if you stop forward momentum, then where does it's a slippery slope. Can you then back up and curl back? And that's why they're doing it. That's really the only reason they're doing it. Maybe goalie safety too. I don't frankly think they care about goalie safety. They want more goals. But yeah, I just think that they don't want an interpretation issue. You know, a game to come down to the last game of the season and a guy does a spin move, kind of slows down and comes all the way back around the other side and scores. And is he stopping his momentum or not? So they're just nipping in the bud before, something bad happens, and I think that's probably the smart thing to do.
In terms of diving, there's now going to publicly shame those who are accused of diving, and they're going to fine them accordingly. The first offense will get a warning, the second offense, 2,000, third, 3,000, and so on and so forth. The coach will also get fined. Do you think a public shaming of divers will have any effect whatsoever?
Yeah, a little bit of an effect, probably. I think you have more of an effect if you start suspending guys. That's what I think is where the effect comes. I mean, what's $2,000 to a National Hockey League player? It's a cup of coffee for any of us.
It's an expensive cup of coffee.
Well, when you're making $6 million, it's not really a big deal. So I don't think that's going to really affect them too much. It'll affect them if the fines are higher, or alternatively, if they miss games. Even if they're fined, even if they're suspended with pay, that'll still hurt them more so than being fined at $2,000.
I agree with Richie. We just want to get diving out of the game. And they had Chris King, who's the senior VP of hockey operations on Hustler and Lawless yesterday, and he was talking about it. They want it out of the game, and it affects the integrity of the game, and it's embarrassing to me. And we saw it quite a bit in the Stanley Cup playoffs this past spring. And I agree with Richie. I mean, they could have probably made those fines a little bit higher. The first time you get a warning, and the second time, $2,000, and it goes up $1,000. Like, to me, first time, fine $5,000 and then go up to $10,000.
But you can't, because that's in the CBA. You can only fine a player. I think the max is $5,000, or maybe it's $10,000 now that you can. It's $5,000 is the max you can fine a player for any one individual offense.
Hey guys, let's agree here. The diving in hockey isn't the biggest issue. I think we'd agree that there's other major issues in hockey as far as the headshots and all that. I think we forgot about that because it's been the summer. We don't remember that issue in the NHL.
It'll take about 1 week of games before we see a bunch of headshots that'll get us all up in the arms.
The diving, let's be honest, what percentage of players are actually diving out there? It's probably less than 10% of the league. There's regular guys that dive. So hopefully we just see less diving. But I agree with Richie. This is a slap on the wrist. It's an expensive cup of coffee for these guys. And I think it will help, but I don't know if it's going to completely eliminate diving. There's always going to be guys that dive. That's the way it is.
I mean, involving the coach in it, maybe. I mean, but you know, you sign these kind of rat-like players on purpose, right?
Sure.
You bring in guys like Matt Cook and Daniel Carcillo and those guys because they cause trouble.
I got to read something.
You know,
here.
There are some pretty good players who are also accused of being divers as well.
Mm-hmm,
so it's not strictly the rats in the league who are the divers.
But I mean, if it depends on what the attitude the NHL wants to take on it. You know, you look at the NFL, not exactly exemplary this in the past few weeks, but the idea that they're protecting the quarterback all the time. So they do their best to protect Tom Brady, for example. If Sidney Crosby dives once in a while, will he be included there?
And Richie, by the way, diving, is it the embellishment up against the boards? You go into the boards and the guy jumps up against the boards?
Oh, it happens all the time. I mean, the problem is the mechanisms in place to stop diving are, to me, not strong enough.
They're not
forceful enough. And then the players have very little reason. Public shaming, players don't care about that.
Yeah. If you really want, I mean, make it so that when you're called for diving, it's especially detrimental to your team. Then that's probably how you stop diving.
Well, you have a number of times you can dive through a year before you're suspended, or alternatively, you make it a 4-minute penalty.
Like they do in the NBA, where if you take too many flops, you do get suspended after a point
in
time.
But what about a 4-minute penalty?
Well, that'll certainly hurt it.
That gets rid of everything. And that's not worrying about the PA. Because with the suspensions and the maximum of 5,000, you really can't go overboard there. Yeah. But what about 4-minute penalty for diving? That'll get diving out of the game.
The worst call in hockey is where the ref calls a guy for a trip and for a dive.
But I mean, don't get me wrong, Drew. That can happen. You can slash somebody and they can embellish.
Right.
They can dive. That can happen. I don't mind that, but I think it is called too much.
Yeah, and I think that they should. If you're going to,
they're not mutually exclusive. Those things.
They're not mutually exclusive. Yeah. But if you're going to punish somebody and make it more forceful, you call the dive for
that.
4 minutes.
But there you go. Yeah, there you go.
Then nobody's doing it anymore.
That's right.
Another issue, and this one is sort of one.
Get Bettman on the line.
We have
Bettman.
All the answers.
Bettman just sits in the corner. He looks great right now. The other leagues. What's going on?
It's unbelievable. I mean, we won't go there because. What a week in sports.
Where do you begin?
The NFL. Exactly. You don't even talk about it.
Bettman expand by 10 teams and everybody would think he's great.
Well, nobody would notice given everything else. This one I find interesting is that there's a concerted effort or rule changes that are going to keep the faceoffs in the offensive zone. If a shot breaks the glass, the faceoff will be in the offensive zone. If it goes off the side of the net and out of play, it'll be in the offensive zone. If it goes off the boards or off the glass, or if it's tipped out by a teammate. So if you're standing in front of the net, the offensive net, and a slap shot comes from the point and you get your stick on it and it goes out and it goes over the glass, that faceoff is now going to be in the offensive zone still.
It's just artificial ways to create offense. And what I'm talking, that's at the end of the day, that's all that is. Artificial ways to create offense. More offensive zones, possible scoring chance off a face-off, and the stats say the more offensive zone face-offs you have, the more percent of a chance you'll have to score. Whether logically it makes sense, I don't know. But the NHL is going to do whatever it can to create to improve scoring. But will at the same time make it only worse when they bring in more teams with less skilled players.
Richie,
I don't know. I mean, money wins.
This is very minor. First off, how many times does the glass break in a season? 5? Less?
Yeah.
Like, if you go, like, honestly, how many times?
It's a tip by the offensive player that goes out of the play. That's the most common.
Right. And it's always been the case where, obviously, a defensive player tips it out. It's always been the case where it's going to be a defensive zone face-off. I meant defensive zone face-off for the team that's playing defense, but I know what you meant. This is, to me, very minor. And sure, is it going to, if you looked at how many offensive zone face-offs are going to happen as the result of tip pucks, well, obviously, it's the offensive zone faceoffs are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is very minor. It's significant in the sense that it used to be a faceoff outside of the blue line, Richie. But is this going to? How much is this going to increase scoring? I always look at these things like, how much is this going to increase scoring? To me, it's pretty minor.
I'm pretty sure, based on what I know, that you can still change off of those.
Yes, you can still make a line change and everything else.
Whatever.
It's not like it's not going to be like icing.
Right.
This one isn't as significant to me as the trapezoid.
this is the new icing rule, is if a player ices the puck or a team ices the puck and then they go to line up for the faceoff and that first player violates the faceoff procedure, mm-hmm. that guy is no longer kicked out of the faceoff dot. That guy is still responsible for taking the faceoff. What was happening last year is you'd see the Jets would ice the puck and then mm-hmm. they would put Chris Thorburn in the middle to take the draw. He would deliberately get himself... deliberately violate the procedure. They'd have to take more time, give his players more of a chance to rest.
And then the center comes in and takes the draw.
Instead, Chris Thorburn would still be responsible for taking the draw. And if he was to violate procedure again, it would be a 2-minute penalty on him.
So the center will just violate procedure and then get to have a breather and then go again?
Yes.
I know. Wow. The brainstorming going down in New York is something,
again,
I tell you.
Again, Richie, to me, woo! Does this really solve anything? Maybe it makes the game go a little bit quicker. But as far as I'm concerned, maybe, hey, if...
Hold on, my stick's broken. I lost an edge. The goalie's pad is the Velcro came off. The strap. The strap came off.
These guys will find a way to get
a little
bit...
The water bottle fell off the net. Oh, I can't believe it.
Yeah. What are the odds?
What are the odds?
Yeah. They'll find... There's no way you can prevent players from getting an extra 5-10
seconds. I dropped my stick in the offensive zone. I got to hurry up and come back. I got to slow down and come back. Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all that's going to happen. Sure. Oh, my ankle hurts.
Let's get to the trapezoid here.
My ankle hurts.
I wasn't even going to talk about
that. That's all that's going to happen. These guys are just going to break the rules some other way. Just, who cares?
Okay, as a trapezoid?
The trapezoid, by far, to me, for the last how many years have I been talking about this? It's the Marty Brodeur rule. It's the other goalies that can play the puck. So now they've made the trapezoid.
Yeah, did you hear? He actually got signed by the trapezoid.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, come on, guys. They've made the trapezoid bigger. Why? To prevent injuries. And so the goalies can play the puck more. And I think eventually, and again, this is my own personal opinion.
Just get rid of the trapezoid.
I think they'll get rid of it, and they'll let goalies freely play the puck again. And I think this is another instance where the general managers are looking at defensemen's ability to play the puck and not get injured, because now the goalie can save defensemen from having to go back and get the puck. What did we say for a guy like Scott Stevens, Richie? Marty Brodeur might have added years to his career because mm-hmm. of his ability to play the puck and not have to always, or Ken Danico, all these guys. And if you're a goalie that likes to play the puck, you're severely crippled by the fact that you can only play the puck in the trapezoid. So I love this rule. And I hope eventually they just completely go back to the olden days. The 1930s, like when you were born, Drew, but
thank you.
The days when there was no trapezoid.
Last one we'll talk about is the change in the, or clarification on the tripping penalty. If a player dives for the puck and successfully gets it with his body, arm, or shoulder, and then he trips the player after touching the puck, it will be considered a tripping penalty. So you can no longer dive, knock the puck away, then trip the player without it being called as a penalty. You know, as last year, you'd see that happen, and, well, he got the puck first, so it's not a penalty.
Well, I think you can still get the puck first, but it has to... There's still some discretion here. I mean, if you trip the player... I know what you're saying, Drew. I think maybe you would say, well, the guy came from behind, got the puck first, but he still tripped the guy. He's a little bit exempt. I still think, though, that there's that discretion where did the player actually get tripped, or was it the case of the momentum from the play? I still think there's a little bit of discretion.
Allow me to quote. Tripping is also clarified to be a penalty if a player dives with his body, arm, or shoulder to interfere with an opponent, even if he gets to the puck first.
Isn't his body, arm and shoulder part of his body?
I would think so. I'm not sure how you trip. I'm not sure how you trip with your arm or shoulder, but not your body.
But I'm just saying, there's still cases, you would see this in all levels of hockey, where a guy would get the puck first, but then he would then trip the guy and get a triple. So to me, is this changing anything?
I mean, playing hockey, I actually like that rule that you're able to dive, and if you get the puck, you're fine. I mean, conceptually, if you're defending and you touch the puck first and you fire it away and then you take the guy out and body check him, you can do that. Kind of complete the play. So if I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking, okay, if I'm chasing a guy, hit the puck, I dive, hit the puck, and he goes, he falls over me. I don't know. All you're doing there, Drew,
more
is
penalties.
Trying to create, well, two things. Trying to create more penalties, which will create more offense, because power plays create more offense, obviously, than even strength, and make guys not dive for pucks when it's a 2-on-1 rush or a one-on, it's a partial breakaway, and then give a guy a better scoring chance. That's all you're doing.
Just an addendum to that
rule change. You could really help it if you stop with every single team playing, so defensively in the trap and actually try and create offense. But the coaches don't want to do that because they lose jobs that way.
This rule change on tripping only applies to the neutral zone or the offensive zone of the puck carrier. If defending, the player touches the puck first before the trip, no penalty shot will be awarded. So it'll be a penalty, but not a penalty shot. Yeah. And referees have been warned about the potential of the offensive player diving in this situation. So they're already looking to see this is a potential area where a dive...
It's good that they put that in there because, I mean, I think the tendency to dive can obviously be way, way higher when you're about to score. So
again, I just love that they're trying to create more offense and they're going to bring more teams into the league.
Well, the reality is, Drew, with all these rule changes, some of them are more significant than others, but you can still do a spinorama.
None of these are significant. These are insignificant rule changes.
Well, some more. I like the trapezoid one. But Drew can still do a spinorama before each show. People don't know that. He always does a spinorama before he gets into his chair. So Drew
and his coffee does a little spinorama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I'm stirring the coffee.
So, I mean, I know the rule changes are, I mean, they're uninspiring to say the least.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll discuss some of the unsigned restricted free agents that are still on the market. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Just some programming notes. Next week, next Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Fantasy Hockey Preview Show.
That time of the year.
It is that time of the year. So that's next Saturday, the 20th of September, 10 a.m. It is the Fantasy Hockey Preview Show, one of our favorites all year long. 2 hours dedicated to getting you ready for your hockey draft in the upcoming NHL season. And then our comprehensive NHL season preview, the 27th of September. That is a three-hour show.
Yes.
Our return to 3 hours. That's the two Saturdays from now, 9 until noon here on TSN 1290. We'll bring you interviews with all of our favorites, and we'll get you caught up and ready for everything to do with the NHL season. Doing it a week early because the 4th of October is Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, for which we have much to atone for, and we won't be on air.
Drew uses that line every year.
Yeah, it's a good line. Once a year.
It's enough with that line.
Thank you.
It's enough.
It's enough with you guys. Let's talk about some of the unsigned restricted free agents that are still in existence. And these are players, it's important to note, these are players who have no arbitration eligibility and who are also not eligible to receive an offer sheet from another team. So they are sort of in this area of limbo.
It's a holding pattern. It really is. I mean, we see this every year, Richie, and I think this is really a symptom, if you want to call it, of the CBA or a sign of how the CBA works, that the majority of these players are coming off of the entry-level contracts. And they're in this position where, do you sign the long-term contract because you think you're worth a certain amount of money, Richie, or do you sign a bridge contract, which we've seen again and again with Derek Stepan, and we've seen that with PK Subban and others.
These are players who have absolutely no leverage. The team holds all the leverage in these situations. Mm-hmm. The only thing the player has is potentially a holdout, but that's not going to help them at all because it's not getting them any closer to unrestricted free agency or arbitration eligibility or anything along those lines.
Or any money.
Or any money, too. Yes, of course. So, you know, there's a list of about 9 or so really, you know, name players, and there's some additional players who fall under this category. But let's start in Columbus with Ryan Johansson. Last year, he had his sort of coming out year with 33 goals and 63 points. They're talking, but there's no immediate resolution in Ryan Johansson.
Well, Pierre LeBrun said, that Jarmo Kekalainen and Ryan Johansson's agent are going to be speaking at some point during this Traverse City tournament there. That's a big one, Drew, for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, it's more significant, I think, than the other players, which is likely why you started off with this name. you know, the team's identity in Columbus is a big, rugged, tough, grinded out on the boards team.
That's why they brought Scotty Hartnell in.
And Ryan Johansson is a guy who can create off the boards, is big, is skilled, sees the ice well. Reminds me a bit of Ryan Getzlaff. You need his high skill level to complement, you know, to allow the team to flourish, because a lot of the guys they have are nice pieces and they complement him well. But you can't have a bunch of guys that are, you know, 40 to 50 point guys without the guys with the potential to hit the 70 to 80 points. And he is the most skilled player offensively on that offense. Now, last year was the first year where he really turned it on. I mean, attitude-wise, there's some question marks there. What shape he's in, there's some question marks there.
Yep.
Skill-wise, there's no question marks. So if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, after one dynamic season, do you want to break the bank for a guy that in the past has shown commitment issues? I frankly wouldn't. And knowing Jarmo Kekalainen in terms of, you know, seeing what he's done and having spoken to him and interviewed him on our show before, seems like a pretty measured guy. I would be surprised if he went real long-term here with Ryan Johansson. And I think Johansson wants to break the bank. Now, it's odd because what it seems like to me, and I've heard multiple reports, and we've had Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch on to talk about this. I'm sort of going long on this one, Ezzy, but I think it's important, and we can go into next segment on the other guys. If I'm Ryan Johansson, I'm saying, give me a year, give me 2 years probably for both teams, and let me prove myself. And if I'm the team, I'm probably saying, I want to make sure he's a real deal. 2 years makes a lot of sense to me. So sure. I'm surprised they haven't locked in a two-year deal yet. It's some kind of 3.5 a year kind of, or maybe, you know, first year 3, second year 4, and something in the round of 2 years, $8 million, $7.5, $8 million. I'm surprised they haven't reached into that number and got it done. Because the concern if I'm Ryan Johansson is the momentum I created last year, confidence-wise, you know, my shape, all that stuff. If I start missing camp, I get off to a slow start, not only do I then possibly risk putting up a big season this year, but then does it affect my confidence the next year? So I'm getting it done for a two-year deal, and maybe I'm taking a little bit less, like a Subban, and I'm saying I will prove you wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah, Richie, there's a few things here. Aaron Portsline wrote about this on Wednesday, 3 days ago, that it looks like Kurt Overhard, who is his agent, mm-hmm. and the Blue Jackets have agreed that it will be 2 years. And I think the issue here is they're way far apart. And Stepan, we remember Derek Stepan, forget who his agent was, but him and Glenn Sather were about $500,000 apart. Here we're talking $3 million. Like, he thinks Johansson and his agent think he's a $6 million player, and the Blue Jackets want to pay him 2 years, maybe, as you mentioned, $3 to $4 million a year. So we're talking over 2 years, there's $3 to $5 million, roughly, whatever. That math is probably completely wrong, but...
$6 million a year.
That's apparently what he's asking for, right? So, but...
A year?
You got to remember this.
He's got no leverage.
Ryan Johansson, I talked
about... Kurt Overhard drinking.
I talked probably a nice fine scotch. When you talk about Ryan Johansson, I remember I talked about him quite a bit on the midweek show when we cover the entire league. I mean, the guy has emerged as a legitimate first-line center. He's only 22 years old. He was a fourth overall draft pick. But don't forget, guys.
Shot up the charts that year. He wasn't supposed to be that good.
But don't forget, he was in the AHL 2 years ago. They sent him down to the AHL and because they weren't happy with the way he was developing. Obviously,
he was not good in the AHL playoffs either.
That turned out to be the right move. But... he's had one good year. He had a breakout year, 33 goals, 63 points. He had a breakout year. But you can't pay a guy $6 million based on 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the thing that's puzzling about this...
pay a guy $6 million in his RFA year number 4.
Exactly. And that's why I don't understand, Richie, why... Ryan Johansson and Kurt Overhart, they're as a team, because Overhart obviously represents him, why they don't just sign the bridge deal, and if he plays the way he's been playing... then he'll get paid TK Subban.
That's
the new model, Drew.
Totally agree with you.
Well, which is smart, finally, because general managers and ownership are using the leverage that the CBA allows them. There's no reason to pay Ryan Johansson $6 million a year right now when, A, he hasn't proved it for more than one season, and, B, the guy's got absolutely no leverage. What's his option? He doesn't have one.
He might
play in the KHL or something.
He might remind Richie of Ryan Getzlaff, but he's not Ryan Getzlaff. Maybe 3 years from now, when he's won a gold medal and he's scored 90 points, maybe he's Ryan Getzlaff. So you can't get paid like Ryan Getzlaff when you've only got one good year.
And again, if he takes a two-year deal and he turns into Ryan Getzlaff, the Blue Jackets will pay him like Ryan Getzlaff.
Right, and he's a great player. Again, I was singing his praises all this year because his point totals shot up way, way higher than his previous couple of years. But again, in this situation, Richie mentioned this, Jarmo Kekäläinen, especially with the salary cap and those implications, he's just not going to get that money. So I unfortunately think that he is going to hold out during training camp, but I do ultimately think he signs before the season starts.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If he thinks he's going to get anywhere close to that much money, he's out of his mind.
One more player, and we'll talk about a lot more. This will go over into next segment as well. Danny DeKeyser on the Detroit Red Wings blue line. He finished last year with 23 points for the Red Wings. That's second among defensemen. He also averaged the second most time on ice among defensemen at 21 minutes and 38 seconds. Uh-huh. Danny DeKeyser, same sort of situation in that he's an RFA with no arbitration rights and not available to receive an offer sheet. What do you think happens in that situation?
You listen to Kenny Holland. I think Kenny Holland doesn't ever panic, and I don't see Kenny Holland really giving in. He'll be the reasonable guy like he usually is, and I think something will get done. DeKeyser's a Michigan boy who wants to play in the Red Wings. Yep. I don't think he's in the... Johansson's attitude has been a little more questionable over the years, but I think you're seeing here, Drew, going back to Kekäläinen. Kekäläinen and Holland, holding strong here.
Smart,
experienced general managers, and I think Kekäläinen and experience in the front offices of different cities, and obviously running a team back in Finland. They're not buckling here under the pressure. And let's be honest. If you look at it from a leverage perspective, from the player, the players are saying, well, Johansson's saying, well, you have nobody as skilled as I am, and DeKeyser is probably saying, his agent's saying, your defense is questionable. Your defense is questionable, and you need me to move the puck and get the puck up to your forwards who aren't as or some aging forwards up there, and Holland's saying you have no leverage. And we're going to pay you a reasonable figure, and if not, then you can wait.
Yeah, I agree with Richie on this one. I think Danny DeKeyser will sign, if not before training camp starts next week, shortly thereafter. I don't think there's any chance that he isn't in the lineup when the regular season starts in early October. DeKeyser, he played with our good friend Andy Murray in Western Michigan there. We talked to him about Danny DeKeyser. Mm-hmm. That was his first full-time year last year, yeah. And he became arguably their second-best defenseman after Cronwall. So, I mean, Danny DeKeyser, I think, yeah, sure, he deserves to get paid, but again, they're probably asking for a little bit longer, and I mentioned, I don't think Kenny Holland's going to give much more than he's offering. And again, with Danny DeKeyser, first year in the NHL, if you get a bridge contract and your point totals go up and your ice time goes up, then again, you'll get paid like a top defenseman when you're 26, 27 years old. But right now, again, he's only shown 1 year, and I think the potential for him is great because I think, as Richie mentioned, his strength is his puck-moving ability. The guy is a good skater, but he's still got to become a better defenseman.
The Wings rarely pay big on second contracts.
Nor should they.
So I don't anticipate that happening.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about RFAs in Boston, Dallas, New Jersey, St. Louis, and Nashville. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. No better way for Rumors to celebrate their 30th anniversary coming up this November than they're doing a little bit of renovation. So right now, unfortunately, a little bit of a comedy hiatus until November, but once November hits, they're going hard at that point in time. Two back-to-back concert series. The Broken Lizard guys are going to be there the first week of November. And then the 30th anniversary weekend, Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, and Dave Hempstead. Four fantastic comedians. One night, one comedy club, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tickets available online right now, rumorscomedyclub.com. Don't miss it. Be there when the club reopens after the renovations and to help them celebrate their 30th anniversary.
Looking forward to it.
Yes.
And shout out to Sheldon Mindell, my number one fan.
Yes, your number one fan. I thought, yeah, forget it. I'm not even going to touch that one. Two guys in Boston who are RFAs, and we discussed this earlier on the program earlier this summer about how these contracts might put the Bruins into a little bit of salary cap problems.
Yep.
That's Riley Smith and Torrey Krug.
There's literally an article every day about Johnny Boychuk being on the trade wire. It's actually hilarious. I can't believe people keep writing the same article every day.
Didn't you rant last week about the internet producing the same article day
in,
day
out? Can
somebody
think something original?
Yeah.
How many more articles am I going to see about Johnny Boychuk being on the trade market by guys who don't really seem to know if he's on the trade market or not?
Well, I don't think they... I think Johnny Boychuk is a huge part of that D. I don't think they want to get rid of him. I think they're trying to get Torrey Krug, Richie, and Riley Smith, both guys, both young players, under contract without having to move Johnny Boychuk. Because Torrey Krug, that was his first full-time season. Remember, he came into the playoffs 2 years ago and had all those goals. And Riley Smith was obviously part of the Louis Erickson trade that sent Tyler Seguin to Dallas. But... Well, I think you'd agree, Richie. Peter Chiarelli is trying to get these guys under contract without having to move a Johnny Boychuk, because Johnny Boychuk has emerged as a good defenseman.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's really come into his own. Obviously, the Bruins being over the cap, Drew, and then with these two signings, you take Mark Savard off the top. So it depends on what you're paying here.
Well, that's exactly it. Right now, the Bruins are $800,000 over the salary cap.
Yep.
With these two guys that they have to sign, they're going to get $4 million in savings when Mark Savard goes on back onto long-term injured reserve, meaning the Bruins have about $3.2 million to work with in order to sign Smith and Krug. Can they get it done for $3.2 million? Can they get both those guys under contract for a total of $3.2
million? No, they can't.
Which means they have to then look into the trade market.
That does mean that, yeah. And you know what, Drew? Even if you're going to... The problem is it's tough. This is... Chiarelli's got a tough situation here, because if you're going to get 3.2, you basically have to pay him on a one-year deal, both of those guys. And even then, you're not going to get it both for 3.2. But if you get him on a one-year deal, you risk... You know, the two-year deal at least gives you a little bit of a buffer, signing-wise for next year and money-wise. But if they have a big year next year, then... You're paying him now to kind of save the rest of this squad, but you're going to pay more later. So it's a risky proposition. They're going to have to move somebody. Now, you read so many conflicting reports. Well, Chris Kelly might be on the wire, or maybe it's not Chris Kelly. If I watched the Boston Bruins quite a bit last year. I'm not trading Johnny Boychuk if I'm the Boston Bruins, even though he's a pending UFA, for a couple of reasons.
Got Dennis Seidenberg's health as a concern as well.
Zdeno Chara is not what he used to be. Yep. Their defense as a whole, I know they want Dougie Hamilton to take the next step, and certainly you mentioned Krug and some of the other young players that they have, but Johnny Boychuk is a big part of that top four. And the Bruins are win later and win now. I know that. But the problem is, if you trade Johnny Boychuk and you elevate Hamilton and put too much pressure on him, their defense isn't that good. It's carried by a very good goaltender, an extremely good forwards, a good system, solid D, but not great D. You're going to take a solid D and drop it down. And what are you doing matchup-wise? Then you're elevating guys like Hamilton who have trouble defending, and your younger defenders. You have a lot of young defensemen then who are going to be playing in roles that they may not be comfortable with. Then you try and put more time, and keep in mind, Chara's minutes will be going down. They go down every year now, really. I believe it's gone down every year. He's going to not be playing 28 minutes a night now. No. It's going to be 23 minutes, 22 minutes. Who's eating those minutes up? Young guys? That hurts your standing in the division. You might have to play more, you know, road games in the playoffs. You don't get the matchups you want. There's big effects that come down here. They have more depth of forward in terms of talent. And I would see them likely moving a forward rather than a defenseman. I could be wrong with that. That's what I would do, at least.
No, you're right. I couldn't agree with you more, Richie. I think Chris Kelly, Jordan Caron, who's a little bit younger, that right side is not as strong as it used to be. And they don't have Jerome Iginla anymore on that right side. And he was playing top minutes in the top six as a right winger. So I think both of these guys are huge players for the Boston Bruins' future. I mean, you're talking Riley Smith, who had 51 points, and sure, he benefited with playing with Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand for most of the year, but he's a good player. And I remember mentioning this on the midweek show again. The guy can play. And he wasn't just a throw-in in that trade for Tyler Seguin. I mean, that trade isn't as uneven as people think. I think Tyler Seguin is the better player, and I think Dallas won that trade. Don't get me wrong. But I think when you consider that they got two very good players in Louis Erickson and Riley Smith, I think the trade is a little bit more equal than you'd have to think. And I agree, Richie. I mean, the Dallas Stars did win that trade. And then you throw in Torrey Krug, who at this point, he's a smaller guy, more of an offensive guy, but 40 points. I mean, the guy is he's up there for top offensive defenseman. And sure, he only might be 23 years old, and that last year might have been his first full NHL season. But you're going to have to think that these two guys between them are going to command, what, in between $5 and $6 million a year on both probably two-year deals, right? So you're probably going to have to get rid of a Chris Kelly or someone else. So I think Peter Chiarelli is in a tough spot here.
Moving to Nashville, a team obviously in the Winnipeg Jets division, Ryan Ellis, defenseman there, is still unsigned. He's the same situation with the RFA with no arbitration eligibility, not eligible to receive an offer sheet. 2009 first-round draft pick. You know, what is Ryan Ellis, and you know, what kind of money would you think that he should be looking for at this point?
I know they played Seth Jones a little bit on the left side last year, but really your right side is Shea Weber and Seth Jones.
Yep.
And Ryan Ellis is a right-handed guy. So he's not playing any more than third pairing unless he's going to switch sides or Seth Jones is going to switch sides. I don't anticipate that happening. He's an offensive guy on a right side that has Seth Jones and Shea Weber.
Meaning,
I don't know how long Ryan Ellis is for Nashville in terms of maybe their offensive needs and the ability to trade a defenseman for an offensive player. He doesn't have a lot of leverage. He's clearly a bottom pairing guy who needs to work on his defense, and he's not a big guy. He just doesn't fit it. You know, because Seth Jones fell in their lap, I just don't see how he fits in long term. So I don't think David Poile's going to be breaking the bank for a guy like this. I see them reaching a reasonable deal to, you know, for him to keep his value. And I see him very possibly being dealt in the future here.
Yeah, and he's a guy that was so hyped up. Remember, he was a member of the Canadian team of the World Juniors. He had 100 points for Windsor in the OHL. He's a guy that right now is a third-pairing defenseman.
And he fits into Laviolette's system because of the offense he can bring.
He fits in, but he's not a top defenseman. And last year was his first full-time year. Again, this is the theme of all these RFA guys, Richie. Most of these guys have only played 1 year, mm-hmm. full-time year mm-hmm. in the NHL. Most of them are in between the ages of 21 to 24.
That's right.
And they're asking for $1 million to $2 million more per year. And again, you know, David Poile, how do you pay a guy this much when you have two other guys? Well, Shea Weber, we know, is under contract long-term. But when you have two other defensemen that are going to be paid significant amounts of money. So for Ryan Ellis, I think apparently the negotiations haven't been going that well. I don't see him holding out because I don't think that he has any leverage like other players to hold out. But I think I agree with you. I don't know if he fits into the long-term plans, but I do think he can fit in with another team because he's got tons of offensive talent.
Well, Barry Trotz said last year, you know, I believe when I was hosting with Hustler and Hustler and Lawless, or Hustler was hosting, I was on with Hustler.
Name drop.
But what Barry Trotz said is, you know, we have basically our six defensemen, you know, for the future. So maybe that's the way they view it. But Ryan Ellis obviously wants to play a little bit more of a role. Think about, you know, we talk about leverage from a contractual point of view. Think about, you know, in terms of CBA, think about it in terms of coaching here. So Laviolette plays Jones and Weber three extra minutes a night, plays them 26, 27 minutes a night to start off the season. Like, there's only so much minutes to go around. There's so much time to go around here. Well, they have high hopes for Roman Josi. They sign him to a long-term deal. So, I mean, Ryan Ellis isn't going to be absolutely sorely missed. He could be replaced. And don't get me wrong, he can shoot it, and he can move the puck. He can skate, but he is just not in the same world as the other two guys, so they're not going to desperately pay him. That's not a concern for David Poile. David Poyle's not going to cede to the pressure of, first of all, there's no pressure in Nashville to sign Ryan Ellis. There's no coverage of the team right now, as we documented last week.
Right. And we'll do the last two players, and they're both out of Dallas. Cody Eakin and
Brandon. We're not going to mention Eric Jelena?
No, we're not going to mention Eric Jelena. Cody Eakin and Jaden Schwartz. Cody Eakin and Brendan Dillon out of Dallas are both RFAs in the same situation.
You're jumping on Jaden. You're jumping over Jaden Schwartz?
Yeah. I know.
And
Jelena. Time functions.
Jaden Schwartz.
Okay, we're not jumping over Jaden Schwartz.
I'm going to go talk about him because I think he's one of the best young players in the National Hockey League. And
we saw him play a lot at UND. When he was with Colorado College,
fits perfectly into what St. Louis does. He's a responsible two-way guy, protects the puck really well, smart guy, buys into the team concept. They need him.
Yep.
That team needs him. He's got leverage.
He had 56 points last year with the Blues.
He'll get signed before the season starts, maybe before training camp starts even.
Cody Eakin, certainly his need is his leverage has worsened with the acquisition of Jason Spezza. He's not a second-line center. He played admirably in that role last year. A third line role for him, I think, would look really nice for them up the middle with the talent of Sagan and Spezza and the pressure that he has been removed from his shoulders. I'm not sure he necessarily wanted that pressure removed, but it has been nonetheless. You know, now you're wanting to get paid as a 2B, a second line guy, and you're going to be a 3 guy. So Jimmy Neal is not going to, fall to that pressure. And there are other guys. They have a good forward group there. guys who can play center if you need, and we haven't, you know, depending on other health issues. And you look at Brandon Dillon, well, that's a different story because their defense isn't very good.
They only have five defensemen under NHL contract.
Right, you know, and they may have some guys bringing up, you know, like Alexiak and different guys like that, Drew, who they could rely on if they need to. Mm-hmm. Brandon Dillon is a physical player.
Yep.
And if you're going to be playing up against St. Louis, like a big team like that, and Chicago, and with speed and skill, and you want a guy like Brandon Dillon who's going to play a simple game, but he's going to play a tough game, you're going to need him. So he has a little more leverage. I see him getting signed or being a priority there more than Eakin, but that doesn't take away from what Eakin contributes to the squad.
Yeah, you could be right. Cody Eakin, I think, really solidified, find himself
a top nine forward.
Absolutely. He's a third line center on the Dallas Stars, but he's an excellent third line center, and he played a lot of even strength minutes, and he can penalty kill.
Smart player.
Very smart player. And I see both of these guys getting signed. I don't think there's a holdout issue with either of these guys. Because of where the team's at, this team is trending upwards, obviously, with the acquisition of Jason Spezza and the way Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn played last year, and Eakin combined with Ryan Garbutt, kind of a Manitoba connection there, lying on the third line there. So these guys will get signed. I think these ones are harder because not only are these guys either coming out of entry-level contracts or their first full-time years in the NHL, I think we're also at a point where almost all of the teams have signed most of their players, and there's the salary cap crunch. So I think it's just a question of fitting those dollars into the equation. So, these two guys are a huge part of the Dallas future, and they should be signed, and I would expect them to be signed probably in the next week.
And there's two guys on the Dallas defense that you trust against right now, without Dillon signed, that you trust against any scoring lines. And that's Trevor Daley and Jordy Benn. And with due respect to both players, I think Jordy Benn's underrated. They're not Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. And Brandon Dillon isn't either, but he helps. And you can play him against the best players. You can't play Connaughton. Gonchar can't move out there anymore. Alex Goligoski had a little bit of a rebound year, but defensively he leaves a lot to be desired. So you can't go up against the division rivals that you have, even with Kari Lehtinen in the back and between the pipes, and think you're going to be able to defend on a nightly basis. I mean, this defense would have a lot of trouble with the Nationals and the Jets teams.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Stefan Kittel is the new NHL Senior VP of Player Safety. What do you remember most about the 2 years he played here in Winnipeg from 93 to 95?
Yeah, he didn't play here that long.
Wasn't very good.
I mean, you know
that's something you remember is that he wasn't very good.
No, what I remember about Stefan Kittel, and I don't know, this goes to his career with the Montreal Canadiens, where he played most of his years. He fought a lot. He's a pretty good fighter. He used to go against the league's heavyweights. So I remember Stefan Kittel back in the day when they had Chris.
This is rapid fire, not monologue fire.
I don't remember. He didn't score that many goals. He probably only got about 10 goals or something while he was here. But I remember Stefan Kittel as dropping the gloves and being a pretty tough cookie.
Wasn't very good.
I like Richie's answer.
St. Louis won that trade.
Barry Trotz was talking about Alex Ovechkin earlier this week. Would you play him as a left winger or a right winger?
Depends who you're playing with.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just dependent. I mean, if you're going to play him with Backstrom, then I'd probably put him on the left side. If you're going to play him with one of the other centers on the squad, it depends on who the other two line mates are, Drew, where you want him coming from the ice. It's a complicated question. I think, you know, some people look at it simplistically, but who are the two, who's the winger in the center, and what are the options, and then I could give you a better idea. And that's a bit of an excuse for a non-answer, but I think that's the truth.
Yeah, I think, and Barry Trotz obviously wants to play him on the left side, and he's ultimately going to have to play where Barry Trotz wants him to play.
He feels natural on the left side.
And I think you also have to, if Alex Ovechkin likes playing on the left side, mm-hmm. and he's had more success at times on the left side, I think you keep him there. But he's going to get his goals. I mean, the guy's going to get his 50 goals. He usually manages to find his way to get 50.
Outgoing Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment President Tim Lywicki said that there are players we have in our organization today whose numbers are off the chart good and whose character is just terrible. Do you believe a correlation exists between good character players and on-ice success for a team?
100%. And this is where the Corsi advanced stats people are not going to be able to quantify this, mm-hmm. and they're going to say character and grit are not something that actually has an impact in hockey. Well, okay, that happens to be your opinion, but if you have good character players, I would happen to believe that there would be a positive correlation between winning and having guys that have good characters and want to win and want to play for their teammates. By the way, is he calling out Phil Kessel here?
I don't know why they're letting Tim Leiwicki speak anymore, or why they just don't get rid of him
altogether. Rich, he's talking about somebody specifically here, and I don't think it's a bottom player. I think he's calling out certain guys.
Again, it's a Blake Wheeler thing. You're asking him a question, he's giving you a truthful answer, and then you're getting mad at him.
Oh, I'm not mad at him. It's great for him. I'm totally entertained by it. I have no problem with it.
Still the president. He hasn't left yet.
I know. But he's outgoing, though, so you might want to tell him, hey, maybe don't do any more interviews for a little while. HBO 24/7 has officially come to an end, but the NHL announced that they will announce a new all access show later this month. What was your favorite scene in the 24/7 series?
Well, I think it's disappointing, by the way, they're not going to have 24/7 anymore. I think probably Randy Carlyle's toast getting stuck in the toaster.
Or just Ilya Bryzgalov, how he was going off about the universe. HBO.
Randy Carlyle also getting mad about the new peanut butter, like the almond butter. That was funny, too.
It's a great series.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
I forgot this last week, but I wanted to give, I guess, a pat on our collective back here. That Illegal Curve, 7-year anniversary last week.
Really?
Yeah, from the creation of the
seven
website.
Years.
So
wow.
Not all on air here, but we've been on air for a significant portion of that time, and I thought it'd be nice to acknowledge.
That's a long time we've spent together.
Most things in my life have only lasted like 7 days.
Oh, don't, yeah. Seven. That's better than where I thought that was going.
7 years. Wow. This is a little bit random. I'm going to cheer Guy Lapointe, who was actually, they're going to retire his number. He was a really good defenseman, won 6 Stanley Cups with the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody remembers Larry Robinson and Serge Savard, but I always remember my dad telling me about Guy Lapointe and how good of an offensive defenseman he was. So it's nice to see him get some recognition because he's up there as one of the greatest defensemen specifically of that era.
Why the Habs retire numbers and the Jets can't?
I think I speak for everybody here when I'm going to cheer Saku Koivu.
Yeah, of course.
His fantastic NHL career, his inspirational NHL career, finally comes to an end this week. He officially announces his retirement. So all the best in retirement to Saku Koivu.
Hopefully we can get him on.
Yeah, we're trying. He's not yet doing media, but our request has been submitted to him for his perusal, as it is. That's it for this Saturday and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Paul Edmonds out in Penticton for joining us to talk about the Young Stars game. Of course, you can hear those games tomorrow and Monday as well on the station. Big thank you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Also available on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. For producer Timmy and for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.